I don't know, just so I can say something while I'm sitting up here, right? As far as the selection part goes, as you well know, but more for the benefit of the total audience, that breeds have fat EPDs, some just have a yield grade EPD. Many of those are incorporated into some of the economic index values, but as was pointed out, given the economic signals in the marketplace, some of those kinds of EPDs aren't weighted as heavily. I would say, though, that there's at least the perception that selecting against fat thickness may have some negative ramifications in the cow herd. Now, I think that represents a gross inefficiency in general thought process by the beef industry in terms of selection, that the animals we select have to be good for all things. They have to produce replacement heifers. They have to produce calves that are going to excel at weaning. They have to produce calves that are going to excel on any grid that these people are going to run them against. So the beef industry, from a selection standpoint, is like a bucket of water that we have poked pinholes in, and the water running out is efficiency we lose throughout. And so we really, this whole discussion is, it's good, but I think a lot of it focuses on within breed selection is where we need to focus our attention here. And we need to really think about the efficiencies we lose by trying to select a bull. Same argument as selecting a breed that's going to be good for everything. We lose a tremendous amount of efficiency there.
You know, I'll just say this, and we'll keep the individual breed politics out of it, but we have hid behind for the last, you know, who knows how many decades in this business by that statement, Matt, and I'm not picking on you, but there's more variation within breeds than there is between breeds. That doesn't work in my world, okay? You ask our feedlot managers, and they'll tell you which breeds of cattle or crosses work for them and which ones don't. Now, does that mean there's not exceptional, you know, in this breed that's toward the bottom of the list? Does that mean there's never any decent cattle in that breed? No, probably not. But on the whole, they fall way short. And so if you are in a breed that has a bad reputation, it's your job to improve that, right, if you are. Because that's the only way you're going to survive. The industry doesn't need, we've said this for how many years, the industry doesn't need as many breeds as we have. We could get along with, I don't know what the number is, 8, 10, it's certainly probably less than 10 for the most part. And we have a lot more than that, right? And a lot of them are gotten pretty small, and that's going to continue to happen. That's because not all breeds contribute the same amount of value to this industry. And so, again, if you're in a breed that's on the low rung of that, it's your job to make that breed better or you won't be around. That's the hard fact about it. Now, same could be said for Five Rivers, right? We've got to feed cattle competitively, and if we don't, we'll be out of business. It's the same exact situation.
I'd argue, at least in part, that the reason why you don't have as much improvement on fat thickness is because it's not very sexy to brag about. You can brag about your weaning weight. You can brag about your quality grade. You can yell about. You can brag about your cost of gain. You can brag about a lot of things, but it's hard to say, well, I had 1.37 inches of back fat, and you had 1.51. I'm better than you. And I believe it or not, that plays a pretty big factor on a lot of people's decision making processes. They want to beat their neighbor. We see it with neighbors that have cattle that feed cattle next to one another. They always want to compare their closeouts. So I'd argue that a little bit is, it's just not very sexy.
So I'm not a cattle feeder, but my argument is the reason we haven't changed yield grades substantially is we don't effectively manage it. By that I mean, if you go to the feed yard, so long as you don't exceed plant average, Y4 and 5, you don't get a discount, right? Am I right? And the moving average of plant average over time has gone up. Recently, it's gone down a little bit because of corn price. But so long as the marginal revenue for a pound of gain is more than the marginal cost, cattle feeders put it on, right? And they're driving towards heavier and heavier carcasses to cheapen back the cattle they're putting in the feed yard. Tom, am I right?
Well, partially, Bob. Partially? I mean, in the short run, that's true because we're just going to feed to the grid, okay, plain and simple. If the packer himself, though, who's getting all those yield grade 4s and 5s, if he decides that he is getting too many, he'll change the grid, okay? He will change the grid, and we'll take days off cattle. Now, that would mean today we would pay less for calves, too, because if we're going to reduce our weights, we're going to pay less for calves. We have to. Okay, that's the tough thing about these weights is what's ideal for our end user and what is economical are two different things. And that's true for finished weight. That is also true for the yield grade 4s and 5s. I mean, right now what you have to conclude, I think, about the yield grade 4s and 5s being as high as they typically run, again, even with feed costs where they are, is just that's the market signal. And the market wants marbling so bad that it's willing to tolerate more yield grade 4s and 5s than you think. Mainly yield grade 4s, of course, but it is. And it's paying for pounds as well. And, of course, right now cattle numbers are down, so that part of it's not a surprise, I suppose, that the market will pay quite a bit for pounds.
I want to compliment the panel and the speakers this morning. Neville, when I first saw your paper, I must admit the hair on the back of my neck stood up as I am a animal breeder by heart and try to use sound science. And I want to compliment all of you this morning on the civil and science-based discussion and economic-based discussion that we've had. And I appreciate that. The challenge I have for each of you this morning is let's look forward 10 years and say, what is the balance of genetic merit along with the balance of heterosis to combine the two together as best that we can to enhance long-term profitability in a sustainable system? Are there genetic tools out there you foresee on the horizon, genetic evaluation enhancements, systems approach thinking? What's your crystal ball look like for 10, 15 years down the road to balance genetic merit and heterosis? And that's open. Matt, I'll start with you, and then everybody else can follow suit.
That's as expected, a broad question. So a couple things there. If we look at system efficiency and how we utilize genetics, what has escaped the beef industry thus far is actually the development and utilization of terminal and maternal lines. I think if we could master that, which is no small task, and I'm not confident. 5 years ago when I started, I was probably confident we'd do that. I've become older in my thought process in 5 years. And more pessimistic. But if we could get to that, we gain tremendous amount of efficiency. And it goes to some of the comments I made earlier towards Dr. Cundiff's question. So I think that's one thing we can do. And then within those respective lines, I think there's a lot we can select for to cater towards terminal traits, be it marbling, yield, and then cow herd efficiency type things, focusing on more relevant maternal traits. We've heard some mention today of genomics, and of course, you'll hear about that, I'm sure, in several afternoon sessions, and that's become relatively commonplace in the majority of major beef breeds genetic evaluation now. We've just scratched the surface on how to utilize that information, and where we would really like to get to, the holy grail thus far, is being able to utilize that in crossbred animals. For management decisions as well, Tom, and being able to pay value for value, as I've heard you say before. And then also, one more, is actually being able to utilize that kind of information to truly refine our crossbreeding systems. That's something that we haven't really considered, we've talked about, but not really delved into, is actually using genomics to develop our crossbreeding systems, which is someplace I think we need to get. But I just start off by doing some of the simple things. I mean, that's the frustration. We want to move forward so badly, and we haven't mastered yet some of the simple things that have been around for decades.
What money drives us. I mean, we got to keep money in our checking account. When we sit down and look at a set of calves that we've killed, and there's $400 difference in the carcasses on 2,500 calves, well, that kind of makes us pay attention to something. And we use a four breed crossbreeding system, and it's my grandfather's done a great job with that, and our cattle are
feed well, they're efficient, we keep the heifers back, breed the sisters to the brothers that we kill and retain those heifers in our herd. Can I tell you what the breeding is on them? Probably not exactly, but what we're working towards is an EID, electronic EID system shoot side that we're tagging all those calves, and we're going to figure out, we're going to try to figure out what crossbred, what crosses within the breed are making us the most money. Which one of those heifers we retain stays within our herd the longest. And that's, we're in the first year of that. I don't know, they talk about being able to manage it. It's a shoot side, a computer next to the shoot threw a lot of our cowboys and employees completely off, but we're weighing all the calves at weaning now and starting to collect some of that data on the crossbreeds, different breeds of crossbreeds, to see which one of those are more profitable, more efficient.
I'll add a little bit to that. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking sometimes in this industry we look at our faults and we forget to talk about our strengths, and sometimes I feel like the same way I about my kids. You know, sometimes I see their faults more than their strengths, and I got to remember to keep some balance. But it is phenomenal. I showed you a slide that showed the top end of the cattle that we feed, the top 10 to 15%, having $200 more just at the feed yard level now, feed yard and packer level in P&L over the average. That's a phenomenal accomplishment. And that's exciting because, you know, we have as an industry, and again, the contribution to many of you in this room that has enabled that top 10% right now hopefully will be the average in 10 years or maybe 10 to 15 years, however long it takes. But that's very impressive. That's very impressive. And so this, and the technology is there to do that. And, you know, what are those cattle in the top 10 to 15%? I would bet you that some of them are straight breds and some of them are crossbreds. There's probably some of both in there. And they're just people that have worked very hard on putting together mating after mating, year after year, of the very best genetics they can find. And they've got a phenomenal product that is contributing to the success of the whole industry. That's a great thing.
Let me add a little to that. I echo a lot what's been said. I think we can, the next 10 years, we're going to really start identifying cattle. We're going to find cattle in a number of breeds that can do the things we're talking about and meeting those things, and then we can start working those in into a system where we can produce that kind of product that really pays us some value. I've been working in a new program here for the last 9 months, and we have a long way to go. We have a lot of producers who don't even know how many cows or have a number in a cow yet. I mean, we've got a long way to go, and probably why we've kind of made a lot of move towards straight breeding, because as I drove across from southeast Missouri to here, there's a lot of crossbreeding still going on in a very unorganized manner. And so as we're still kind of cleaning up a mess so we can start back and really start working toward a product that's more uniform. And I agree with Tom. We have cattle that we're going to get there. I really think we will. We're going to have cattle as the norm that can do that in a much more efficient and profitable way. And as we identify those within all breeds, I think we can move forward a lot quicker than we have in the past. And we have the technologies to do that much more quickly in the future than we do right now.
I think it's an interesting question, and I recall very well hearing Kevin Yon back in February in Tampa saying, it's this incredible paradox in our business, right? He's saying his customers come to him and they care about two things, calving ease and soundness, and the rest of it's up to us as seed stock producers to make sure they have enough of everything, whatever it is, right? And so there's this very, on one side, very simplistic approach. But I think to your question, and you know, say I'm crazy, 10, 15 years from now, I'm not sure we're going to be having this conversation about the industry, because I think we're going to continue to sort of segregate where cattle become increasingly programmed, right cattle, right time, right place, whatever it is. And we're not going to be talking about some solution that fits everybody, every producer. And really, you're going to probably choose, I'm going to fit into this network And because that fits my management scheme, and I like that marketing scheme and what have you. And so sort of this broad brush, I'm not sure we'll be having that conversation 10 years from now.
Tom, one of the questions that I guess that would be interesting is part of the decline in the penalty on your grade 4s and 5s as a result, has that resulted in us being able to take two generations of bulls to the sale barn and get $1.10 for them because you're able to use that excess fat mixed with lean bull meat and supply the ground beef market as strong as it is?
You know, that probably is some of it. I mean, the LFTB deal a year ago did change some of that. I mean, we had in this industry, we had a great use for those 50-50 trimmings, and we could create a lot of value through that lean fat, you know, that process that it basically is shrunk a lot from where it was. But I would say yes. I mean, just in general, I would say that is true. You know, the tighter supplies have allowed some of that, as well as the other factors that we've talked about.
So do you see that probably continuing? And if so, I see that as an opportunity for a producer to trade in old genetics and buy new genetics for very favorable pricing.
Oh, I think so for sure. I mean, one of the interesting things that we have going on in our industry right now because of, you know, 2+ years, I would say almost really 3 years of drought in varying, you know, key cattle areas, we have continued to push a lot of cattle into feed yards that otherwise wouldn't be there. And once we get enough moisture and enough feed over broad enough areas, that's going to pull back. I mean, there's going to be heifer retention. Cow slaughter is going to drop. And when that happens, the lean part of the market is going to get extremely tight. And we can import more to some degree, but we can only import so much. We're already doing that. So I look for the lean part of the market to be very strong the next 2 or 3 years. And that will help your cull bull values, to your point.
Question for the panel. As we look to the future, I think one of the things that this organization has started to make a move on, and I think as breeders in the both seed stock and commercial, we are going to re-emphasize reproductive efficiency within our industry to get our numbers up. I don't think we're going to get more cows. I think we're going to try to get more cows to have survived calves that get to market. As we change that selection pressure from end product to reproduction, what will that have as an effect on our pricing structure as we look at market grids, pounds of beef that we will supply the industry and those kind of things?
Why didn't
Does
you
anybody
ask an
want
easy
to
question?
Answer that?
Why didn't you ask an easy question, Twig? Jeez. I agree with you. Probably repro is going to get more important. We're probably not going to grow the cow herd a lot. And that means, to me, we either got there's two ways to improve fertility genetically. If we want to focus on the genetic side of it, and that's selection and crossbreeding. That's it. It's the only two choices we got. So that means seed stock producers within breed or within composite that's under selection have to use the tools at hand. We probably, as an organization and as academics, need to build some new tools, reevaluate fertility as a trait and the ways we collect data. And certainly seed stock producers in the audience, the way you report data will be key to making that improvement over time. And from a, you know, enhancement via genomics, if we don't have data, it doesn't matter how much genomic data you throw at it, okay? Sequencing is probably going to change that a little bit, but in the long run, we're still going to need lots of phenotypic data, and the challenge with reproductive traits is we need lots and lots of it because it's a lowly heritable trait. So we got to get serious as organizations and as academics and as breeders focusing on reproduction. I mean, it's, as John Pollock has said, that's the high-hanging fruit. And if we're going to go after it, we better get going.
You know, rain will help that reproduction a lot, too, and I'm hoping we'll see some more of that in the next few years. But I don't really see that personally as an or, you know, reproduction or value-added premiums or carcass traits. I think it's an and. I think that the pull from the value-added branded premium side of it, value at the consumer level, is only going to get stronger. It's not going to get weaker because these guys, you know, they've got to satisfy their customer. And one thing we do hear repeatedly, and I think this is something we can all relate to because we realize how, you know, we like high prices on cattle, but we also realize that we're pushing a pretty high price on the consumer. The consumer's expectation at $5.50 a pound average retail beef prices is more than it was when it was $3.50. They are paying that price maybe somewhat reluctantly, but they are certainly expecting a good experience, and we've got to give it to them, or we won't be able to keep our prices where they are.
Yeah, let me add to that. I don't think it's an either-or. As we looked at the Show Me Select Heifer program, and we've introduced fixed-time AI to a lot of producers who had never dreamed of using AI before. Now those people not are just using it in their heifers, they're using it in their cows. We have access to highly proven bulls of all breeds that respond well to that, putting a tremendous amount of reproductive pressure on a lot of cattle already. A lot of the people in our in that system for us, you know, are selecting heifers that settle to the first AI, and that's their selection. They've been putting pressure on that for the last decade. So I think we can have all of that. I'm one of those. I want it all. I guess I'm kind of greedy, but I want to be able to do it all. I think we can do that all, and that pressure has already started with the advent of the ease of fixed-time AI and the tremendous growth I think that's going to come in that part of the sector. I think we're already going to see that pressure, and that pressure is going to continue even more so.
So I would agree that we can have both. Relative to reproduction, though, I'd like to see us actually select for it and not cull against it, because one's going to get us there a lot faster than the other way. And the other thing, I'm somewhat pessimistic about the adoption of genetic technology sometimes, but then I see Patterson in the audience, and you've got, 10% penetration in AI, so we're still better than you guys. What we really need to think about coupling is some exciting reproductive technologies with the advancements in genetic technologies we have. And I think if we couple those two things, Twig, we can resolve some of these issues a lot faster.
Okay. One last question. Willie?
This is for the end product guys. We've got 33 million cows down to 30 million, down to less than, we're at 29 million. And you keep talking about end product being a premium, $200 premium. I don't go to Ruth Chris. I've been to Ruth Chris, but a $50 steak doesn't taste good to me. I can't eat it. It's good, but it's just too much for me. I mean, we've got $7 and $9 steaks at Walmart. Is that what we're going to move to? You guys all want $200 premiums. Is that what we're moving to? Are we moving to beef being the lobster? I mean, is our middle-priced beef going to come offshore? Is that the industry we're moving to? I'm concerned about where our industry is moving. And are we leading it that way? Nobody's talked about, I don't want commodity beef prices, but are we moving our industry toward only the premium sector?
Willie, that's a great, great point. And I think, you know, a lot of our discussion on premium product is growing domestic and some international growth in that sector of the market. But if we look forward to 2050 and the demand for global protein production, the emerging middle class in Asia and maybe Africa and India and South America, if we can't afford that product, premium choice product and better, how are they going to afford it? So if we want to talk about growing the beef business, I agree, Neville, it's going to be big on more sector and more channel-driven, but won't there be a huge demand for uniform, select-graded, efficiently produced beef from the United States in that global market, or is there an opportunity for that? And I'm not the meat scientist, so maybe Deb or Neville or Tom, one of you guys want to tackle that?
Well, let me try to tackle that from Cisco's perspective. And, if I look at our average consumer and the question being, are we trying to, go more towards the lobster type market? When you look at where our people are and our customers are, they are wanting that higher and higher quality product, and we're exporting more and more of it today. And our customers want to know more about what was done to the product and how it was done to the product. And however that fits into the marketplace, I don't see that becoming a smaller and smaller part of it. And if you want to work into the more commodity type market, then you're starting to talk more and more about alternative proteins and competing on a price basis.
And so, Willie, I would actually argue the other side of that then is if we're getting too high priced at that premium level, and it's wonderful that consumers are asking for that, then we need to create even more product to help lower the price and be more competitive. Therefore, more consumers can have bigger or greater access to a higher quality product, and then we have more consumers eating beef versus it being a selective decision between a high-end and a commodity, and then the commodity, well, I'll choose pork or poultry. So I would argue we want actually even more high-quality product out there in the marketplace to be price competitive and quality competitive with our competitors.
I think what you're seeing in the marketplace, and it came out a little bit in the audit when we interviewed specifically retailers, we haven't seen restaurateurs change much in terms of what their product specs are. But we had a lot of retailers comment on how they've changed their product specs for the retail case to satisfy their clients, not because of price, but because of quality. And so I think you're just getting more differentiation between certain retailers in the industry marketing towards a certain consumer based on their expectations and their wants. I don't think you see either product going away or turning into the lobster market or et cetera, but you're seeing more differentiation between retailers in the marketplace and what they offer.
I want to pile on a little bit to what Neville said, and I think you all can relate to this. Willie, that would be, and I don't think it's a fear or concern for us, because it would be a little bit like, you know, you and your bull program saying, boy, I don't want to produce too many more of those $8,000 bulls because my average is going to be too high. You know, what you will quickly figure out is I'll just add another 50 and sell another 50 and bring that price down. But the quality, you know, keep the quality as high as you possibly can. So that's what, like Neville said, I mean, I hope that's where we're headed in our industry. And I think we are with this emphasis on quality. It's making more of those $8,000 bulls.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think that concludes our panel this morning. If you've enjoyed it, please join me in thanking them.